Lieutenant Colonel M.R. Ferns, Reel 3. You were talking about the retreat, Colonel.
It was decided, this officers' meeting in the hospital at La Bassée, that the best thing we could do was to report to Army headquarters. And we set off in the transport to drive to Wimereux. This is where we met the refugees, and our journey was very slow. I remember we went via Saint-Omer. Eventually, we arrived at Wimereux to find that it was rear army headquarters, and they were in the process of being evacuated back to England. We were told to report to the camp commandant in a rest camp in Boulogne, which we duly did. The camp commandant told us that we would be used in the defence of Boulogne, and we were split up into two companies. Major Perry took one, and I took the other. We marched from the camp, as far as I'm concerned, we marched from the camp up through the town and took up a position on a railway line overlooking a river. And we spent the night there. We had a few Bren guns and we had one boy's anti-tank rifle. Early next morning, we saw what we took to be some German tanks on the other side of the river. Out of range of the Bren guns, and probably out of range of the boys' anti-tank rifle. But we fired that anyway. We then received orders to retire to the Fish Quay in Boulogne. And we marched back through the town, down to the harbour, and found the Fish Quay. And we remained there for a few hours, no orders, nothing. So I decided I'd better go and find what was going on. I don't know how I got it, but I got a car. I don't think it was my own pickup, I think it was a car. And I went across the bridge to the Quay Maritime, where I found a brigadier. And I told him who I was and what I was, and he ordered me to bring my troops across the bridge as quickly as possible, as the bridge was going to be blown up. So I went back, got the men out of the Fish Quay, and we doubled across the bridge to the Quay Maritime. Here I was told by the brigadier, who was, I think his name was Fox Pitt, a grenadier guardsman, and he was commanding some grenadier guards who had been sent over from England. And it had been decided that there were no more ships coming in to evacuate from Boulogne. The troops would try to march to Evreux, where they thought they could get some ships to evacuate to England. I told him that I'd already seen some tanks that morning across the road that went towards Evreux. He told me to mind my own business and fall my troops in behind the guards, which I did. The guards marched off, and I told my troops to stand fast. There were a lot of warehouses on the Quay Maritime, And I put the troops, who hadn't had sleep for several nights, in one of the warehouses. By then it was getting dark. And with a signaller called Corporal Pickering and a young officer called Tony Cookson, I walked up the Key Maritime hoping to find a boat of some sort or something like that. When I got to the station at the end of the Key Maritime, I found a hospital train which had been bombed. I made inquiries of the medical people there, and they told me that a destroyer was coming in at any moment to evacuate the wounded from the hospital train. And in due course, this destroyer arrived and pulled up alongside in the dark. I went on board, saw the commander, told him who I was, and that I had approximately 100 men in one of the warehouses, and could he take us back to England? He said that he'd been sent over to collect the wounded from this hospital train, but that if my men were there when the last wounded was put on board, he would take us back. I sent Lieutenant Cookson back to the warehouse with instructions to bring the men up as quietly as possible, because there were a lot of other French troops about and I didn't want a stampede. He did very well. He collected the men, led them quietly up, and in due course we were able to board this destroyer and come back to Dover. But in doing so, amongst the men in the warehouse were several senior NCOs, including the 6th Battalion RSM, Davidson. All I can think is that when the men were told to rest in this warehouse, there were a lot of bales of wool and things which they rested on, the senior NCOs had moved to a separate part of the warehouse. Because when Lieutenant Cookson went in to rouse them and bring them out, the RSM and the senior NCOs didn't know about it. And they were left behind, and they spent the rest of the war as prisoner of wars.
Can I ask a few questions at this point before we get back to England? Was there any German activity whilst all this was going on in the quayside?
The only activity that I remember, actual physical activity, was the bombing of the hospital train. We were never fired on when we were up on the railway in position, and I don't remember any firing in the town whilst we were at the Key Maritime.
What was the morale and discipline of your own men?
They were all very tired and fairly dejected.
And they had their weapons with them?
Yes, we all had our weapons with us. He was with us, and he got left behind in Boulogne. I think he was tending sick or wounded people, but he did not get evacuated.
This was the doctor. What was his name?
Dr. Heslop, Captain Heslop, John Heslop.
The journey back, was it quiet?
I can't remember anything about it. I went straight to sleep on the deck. Woke up in Dover Harbour. And from there we went by train to Aldershot. And I still had all those Belgian francs. And I remember very well there was a paymaster when we got to Aldershot. It was a fine morning. He had money if you wanted any, and men could draw money. I went up to him with this haversack. And I told him he had to take it. I said, it isn't mine, and I want a receipt. And I handed over all these thousands of Belgian francs and got a receipt. And for many years afterwards, I was pestered by the paymaster or somebody, continually getting letters to know where I'd got this money from, what imprest account had it been debited to, and all I could tell them was that it had been given to me when I went off on the route regulation by Brigadier Massey. And I handed that money in there at Aldershot.
Did you ever discover what had happened to the rest of the battalion? Had they gone off at a tangent?
Only hearsay afterwards. They went up to Armentières. They never stopped at La Bassée. They went up to Armentières. And they took part in the withdrawal from Dunkirk.
So you're
No, go on.
You're back in England and...
We spent the night at Aldershot. And then... we were sent back to Durham. The Durham Light Infantry members of my squad, that's all I can call them, they weren't a company. The majority were Durham Light Infantry. We went back by train to Durham, and they were billeted in a cinema in the North Road, Durham. I went back to Brandsmouth, where my wife lived, and I think then Brandsmouth Castle was the regimental depot of the Durham Light Infantry. I had 2 or 3 days at Durham when orders came that we had to rejoin the battalion at Rugeley, near Knutsford in Cheshire. And we went, my memory is we went by train and rejoined the battalion at Rugeley.
And, of course, they'd had a hard time as well as yourselves.
Yes, they had indeed.
What kind of losses had the battalion suffered?
If my memory serves me right, we lost 17 officers as prisoners of war. One officer had been seriously wounded but had got back, but he subsequently died, Lieutenant Prince. I think that was the only actual death. But the battalion lost several hundred men, mainly prisoners of war. In the attack on Arras, they'd taken 400 German prisoners, but then an awful lot in due course were taken prisoner themselves.
How did you feel yourself personally about being left out of battle?
I don't think I had many thoughts at all. As I've said on these tapes, I seem to have either been rear party or advance party, route regulation or something. I was always doing something separate from the battalion. Why, I can't tell you. When I got back to Rugeley, there was a court of inquiry as to why I had come out from Boulogne. I was exonerated, as was Major Perry, who was the senior officer of the party. He'd come out separately, incidentally. His half of the Boulogne party had been evacuated earlier in the day. I don't know how that had happened. So he got out during the day. We got out at night, and I think it was the last ship to leave Boulogne.
So that rather unpleasant experience awaited for you, of course, at Rugeley.
Yes, it was. Colonel Miller, of course, hadn't come back with the battalion. He'd been evacuated from France earlier. The adjutant, Major Jeffrey, had taken over command of the battalion and brought it back from Dunkirk. And He was commanding the battalion when I got back to them at Rugeley. I can't remember a great deal about Rugeley. It was in a park. We weren't there very long before we moved down to Dorset. We moved, I think we moved by train, but I wouldn't be certain of that. I remember Bridport. Ultimately, battalion headquarters went to Lytton Cheney. I was given command of C Company, whose company commander, Major Rodham, had been taken a prisoner of war. And C Company was detailed to the beach at Abbotsbury. A Company was on my right, battalion headquarters at Lytton Cheney.
Did Colonel Miller not come back to the battalion?
Colonel Miller never came back to the battalion.
Where did you get your drafts from to make up for your losses?
We got our draft from the Argyll and Sutherland Highlanders. And I think that was at Rugeley. I think they joined us at Rugeley. And they were nearly all Argyll and Sutherland Highlanders with very little experience. They'd just about learnt heavy infantry drill and they were posted to a light infantry regiment. Each company had quite a lot. I did in C Company. And in the main, they all turned out to be first-class soldiers. Some I can remember particularly. There was one bad one I remember who caused us a lot of trouble. I think he came from the Gorbals. Can't remember his name, which is perhaps just as well. But we spent the summer on the beaches at Abbotsbury in Dorset, near the Chesil Beach. The Chesil Beach consists of shingle, and we found it extremely difficult to make any section posts in the shingle. As soon as you dug it, the shingle fell in. It was a wonderful summer. A lot of the dogfights for the Battle of Britain took place over Portland Bill. And we regularly saw planes falling into the sea, Spitfires flying along the beach doing victory rolls. We had to stand to night and morning. My rear company headquarters were in the ornamental gardens, which were about half a mile behind the beach, where the quartermaster had his cookhouse and so on. My company headquarters, I took over part of the Coast Guard station at Abbotsbury, which was still manned by the Coast Guard. We didn't do many exercises. We were on the beach, we were putting up wire, we had to put dannet wire into the sea, rolls of dannet wire into the sea.
What's dannet wire?
Dannet wire is barbed wire in coils. And you pull the coils out, stretch them out, and peg them at either end, and then there's coils of wire, which was very much disliked by the fishermen because they could no longer fish off the beach, which they did. They used to catch mackerel, which we used to get as many as we wanted. Delicious. One incident I can remember, just below Abbotsbury Castle, which was a ruined castle on a hill, there was a field. And during our stay there, the engineers came and laid a minefield in the field below the castle, behind the beach. And at some period of time, I can't remember whether it was day or night, a beast, a bull or a cow, got into this field and set the minefield off, and it all exploded. We had a wonderful time there. We were very friendly with the local people. There was an air observer, Royal Observer Corps point, manned by locals. We became very friendly with them, and they challenged us to a cricket match. And we played them against cricket. We became very friendly with the swan herd at the Abbotsbury Swanery, a man called Lexter. And I and my wife have been back to Abbotsbury once or twice since the war, and always received a wonderful welcome from old Lexter, the swan herd. My wife was billeted in the Ilminster Arms Hotel, which was very convenient. That was about a mile from the beach, until the order came from Corps headquarters, I think, that all wives had to be evacuated from the area. And so she had to leave.
What billets were you in, Colonel?
I had one of the Coast Guard houses as a mess, an empty house. We took it over as an officer's mess. The men had bivouac tents behind the beach. And there was a leave. We were allowed to go into the village, one 1,500-weight truckload each night. And they could go in. There were one or two pubs in the village. And they could go and get some beer. The 8th Battalion were on my left. And they used to come into the village. And it was a very happy time. We never saw anything of any Germans.
Was there no scares of invasion during this period?
Well, one stood to night and morning, always on the lookout. And, of course, there were sentries all night. But until... when was the false alarm? There was a false alarm when the bells rang. That must have been in September, I think. We never left the beaches. We didn't do any exercises. We were guarding the beaches. Eventually, I should think about the end of September, we were relieved on the beaches by the RASC. They took over our position, and the whole battalion, well, the whole brigade, division, moved further west. The battalion headquarters went to Maiden Newton, still in Dorset, I think. And whilst we were there, the order about wives was rescinded, and my wife rejoined me. Whilst we were at Maiden Newton, we did quite a lot of training. I remember we had a cricket match at Dorchester. I remember that whilst we were at Maiden Newton, His Royal Highness the Duke of Gloucester visited us, inspected the battalion, and had a drink in the mess. I was able to get one or two days hunting. A friend lent me a horse. I went out with the Cattistock hounds. I can't remember when we moved on from Maiden Newton, but the next move was to Devon. And battalion headquarters went to Ufcombe. I was still commanding C Company, and we went to Columpton. And there was two other rifle companies in Columpton. My company was billeted in an hotel, empty, devoid of furniture, at the Manor Hotel, or the Manor House Hotel in Columpton, was my company billets. And they were quite comfortable there, right in the middle of the town. The officers decided to have a joint mess in the Columpton Hotel, at the far end of the town. The only thing about the training that I can remember at Columpton was that we had to do a very long route march. It was about 20 miles. We marched from Columpton to Dulverton, or somewhere near Dulverton, spent the night there, and marched back the next day. And another thing I remember whilst we were at Columpton, we did a very big brigade exercise on Exmoor. We went by motor transport to watch it on the Bristol Channel, and from there up Porlock Bank, and I think it was a 3-day exercise. The weather was very bad. It snowed. And we finished the exercise. The weather got so bad the exercise was called off at Simon's Bath, or somewhere near Simon's Bath. Whilst we were at Columpton, we used to visit Exeter, which was some 10 miles away. Intercompany football took quite a lot of our time. Each company had their football team. I can't remember any ENSA shows. I think there was a cinema in Columpton, so the men went to. And there were plenty of pubs.
What was the state of the equipment during this period that you had?
All the equipment we'd lost in France had gradually been made up. And I think by the time we got to Columpton, we were more or less back up to G1098. I think we had everything by then.
And were you happy the way training was going and morale?
Yes. The Argyll and Southern Highlanders by then had got into our ways. No, it was quite a happy time. We were warned for overseas service to sail in about February. But for some reason or other, that departure was postponed. And I don't think we left England till about April or May.
What about leave during this time?
Yes, leave was granted. I think we had Christmas leave. I think everybody got leave whilst we were, I think, at Columpton. I think everybody had leave. I'm not certain we didn't get two leaves, because we got an embarkation leave as well. A week's embarkation leave. I think we mostly had Christmas leave and then embarkation leave.
And you were saying that there was quite a lot of air activity in this area.
Not so. Exeter got bombed. Exeter got bombed. Not so much when we were at Columpton. Most of the aerial activity was when we were on the beaches, but we were never bombed.